Exploring the importance of having the right skills to succeed. This is Skillfully Speaking, supported by Babcock International, presented by Skills Ambassador Jackie Grubb.
Welcome to part two of our special two-part launch of Skillfully Speaking with Dame Kelly Holmes.
Kelly, you are making my heart bubble with admiration and inspiration. So can I take you to that moment of the 800 metres and the 1500 metres? And can you tell us how that felt and just take us through the journey of that? Because we all remember it, don't we?
Yeah, we do. I mean, any young person, look at this, Google it.
Exactly.
Yeah, so Athens was, I'd been dreaming for 20 years to be Olympic champion. It was my third Olympic Games.
Yeah.
My first, I got a stress fracture. I came fourth.
Right.
My second, I had a 12-centimetre tear in my calf muscle from the January. I was told I'd never get to those Olympic Games.
Oh, dear.
And I ended up getting a bronze medal. That was like a gold, as I say. I got to Athens. I had, if I can talk about this quickly, because it puts it in perspective of maybe that achievement.
Yeah.
Is I'd been in the sport for now, by then, 12 years as an international athlete. And I'd had the highs and lows of sport, like the real highs on the rostrum, the real lows with all the injuries you can imagine you can get, stress fracture, ruptured calf, torn Achilles, I had glandular fever, tonsillitis, three operations on my stomach. Yeah, I'm still performing. So I get to those Olympic Games after a year where I hit rock bottom. That year beforehand tested everything about me, about being here, wanting to live, wanting to succeed, feeling I could fulfill my ambition or not, giving up completely on life, giving up completely on me. And it was the hardest year I ever had. But because I got through that year, coming into 2004, the Olympic year, all I knew is that I'd never given up. I'd gone through all the resilience and highs and lows, the knockbacks, the setbacks, the re-evaluating, re-upskilling, rechanging the way I maybe trained and performed, talking to the people that I needed to help me, getting the right people behind me who believed in me, and coming out and going, right, I'm going to do this. And because of all of those things that go wrong in life and journeys, and then you look at them all and go, right, have I made the changes to myself and to the situations I put myself in? If I've done that, there's a good chance I can't fail. So I put all of those things in place. I reevaluated everything that I'd ever done in my career, all the people around me. I got the best people, believed in me. I said, this is it. I cannot fail now. In my head, I couldn't fail because I felt like I've gone through everything else. Like, I'm still here. So when I went into the 800 and the 1500 metres, I actually didn't think I'd ever do both the events. I doubled up at quite a lot of my championships and my whole dream was to be Olympic 1500 metre champion. And that was second in my journey. So when I did the 800, I was risking my 20 years of dreaming because you have to do three races in the 800 metres and three races in the 1500 metres. And me taking part in those three races at world-class level risked the ability to potentially be on form for the 1500. But what I'd known is I know how to run 800 metres. I know my opposition. I'd learnt about them. I believed in myself that I could get a medal and I run how I had trained. I didn't let anything deflect my way of thinking. I didn't bring anything negative into what had happened prior to that moment. And I thought, right, I'm going to go out there and do it. So I ended up winning the 800 metres, which is not what I expected at all.
Because why?
I was good at 800 metres, but I'd never had in my head that I was going to be Olympic champion. And this is why, if people have in their head that they could be something, it draws them to really succeed. And if people think they're good at something, it can take you further than you thought. So I always knew I was good at 800. Mm-hmm. I'd won, I think, 5-6 international medals at 800 metres. So I was, in my head, good enough to be there. In my head, good enough to win a medal. I just didn't have that extra thing of, oh, I'm going to be Olympic champion. So what it did is just allowed me to run and I won. It sounds like really easy. So anyway, I won the 800 metres. which if anyone watches it, was like by the skin of my teeth. It was like, I always say it, like a win's a win. Take the wins when you're there. Then I went into the 1500 metres. And in that one, I didn't go in thinking I'm going to be Olympic champion. I went in knowing that I've put all the work in I possibly could. I was injury free for the first year in seven. I had got the best team around me. I'd learned how to race over all those years. All my skills were literally ticked off. Everything like I ever could be as an athlete were ticked off.
Wow.
And so all it was about me staying focused, doing what I'd done multiple times of running around the track, not being overwhelmed by the exterior voices and the track and knowing that it's just another track. I've just got to run the same as I've done every single day to get to this point and not let anything faze me. And it all just went clockwork. It was just the weirdest moment in my life. And I won, obviously, my second gold medal, which if I look back on it all now, the journey was all about, I wanted to prove to myself that I could be good at something when other people thought I couldn't.
Yeah.
Like that was one of the things. The second thing is I realised I had a talent in something. And I think it's so important that people do see you. Everyone's got a talent. Yeah. Everyone has a talent in something. You just have to maybe find it and try new things and try different things and not let people put you off. And the talent's normally you're passionate about. You feel like that overflowing, like overwhelming, I got this, I want to do this, I love this, you know, and I had the passion. And then I found people around me that believed in me and helped me get there. And that's important. Mm. And I don't believe I stopped learning to be the best athlete until I stood on top of that rostrum.
Wow.
And that was after 20 years of being a runner, 12 years of being an international athlete.
Yeah.
That was only when I stood there, because that was where I thought I could get. If I thought I'd only can ever get to a bronze, I would have still stood on that rostrum and thought, that's it, I've done it.
Yeah.
So the thing is, I believed I could be on that top.
So you're absolute proof that dreams can come true.
Yeah, that's what I want people to realise, that I didn't come from anything. I'm a council girl kid. We didn't have money. I learnt very young to make my own living. I was always passionate about helping people. But this sort of thing is my first actual job was a nursing assistant. And I was a nursing assistant for people with mental and physical disabilities, adults. Mm. And I was only 16. And I became very much aware of the fact that one of my skills was about empathy and just helping people be better than they could be because I had the ability to do that, whereas they needed support. And that for me as a young person became one of my strengths, I think, through my career is that, you know, I became a mentor. I've started a charity for young people, disadvantaged backgrounds, helping them to succeed. That for me was a skill, not a skill that I had an exam result about, not a skill that somebody told me I was going to have or be good at. It's something I felt I could be.
Yeah.
And so those so-called soft skills are invaluable because they can make a difference to so many people.
Mm. You are the president of the Dame Kelly Holmes Trust, which utilises athletes to empower disadvantaged youth and the skills needed to gain real impact.
Yeah.
Can you talk to us about that?
I started Dame Kelly Holmes Trust in 2008, actually. And the reason why I started that charity is because I always remembered my PE teacher, the one person that can make a difference to someone's life. And I wanted to be that person. And so what happened was I was talking to a lot of athletes that had given up their own careers in something where they'd have a job and go to work to be an athlete. And I remember coming back from Athens, winning two gold medals and seeing all these other athletes that had no idea what they were going to do next. Yet I'd been put on this pedestal, had all these doors open to me because I had the gold medals. Yet all these other athletes had worked as hard as I had, had, you know, given up everything, been successful, but they didn't have maybe the profile. And in sport, it's like in any world, it's sometimes profile and what door opens to you and what opportunity makes you ahead of someone. Somebody else. It doesn't mean you're better than somebody else. It just gives you that stepping stone, right? So I thought, as an athlete, what can I do? What skills do we have as athletes, sports people, to help young people? And I believed we have skills that will show that if you don't give up on yourself, You become a better version of yourself. If you have the resilience to get through tough times, you'll go one step further than you ever thought you could. If you can work and communicate effectively with people, you'll get the best out of you because you're asking for support. And that person that you're asking for support is willing to give you more. If you ask for support, not always expect it to come straight away, which unfortunately is the world we live in, the doors again open to you. Athletes have gone through the journeys of disbelief, negativity, heartache in some things, injuries, having to give up, told they're not good. We've gone through all of that mentally.
Yeah.
And so I believe that person had the skills. So what happened was, is because I was also working for lots of other charities for young people. I've done charity work for years.
Yeah.
And I thought, how can I put these two together? And I realised that empowering people is having one person that can tell you can be good. So I wanted my athletes to be the one person that can tell these young people that felt they couldn't get anywhere in life that they could be good. Mm-hmm. I had no idea how to start a charity. You know, I started a charity because I had a passion to help others. And as I said, you know, I didn't have any academic skill set, but I had me. So I said to this guy once, I need an office space. I was in London and I'd been on this wonderful trip with a prime minister, with all these business people, really high business people. And I think, oh God, you know, I'm just this athlete. And then I thought, I'm Dame Kelly Holmes, the athlete. I was kind of just thinking, oh, I had to start remembering not to put myself down. I'm with all these business people. And I said to this guy, I need an office. And he said, why? And he was like the CEO of a massive company in the city in London. And I said, because I want to start a charity. And he said, we don't have any offices. I said, you have to have space, like in your big office. I'm not always that confident, even though people see me as a confident person. You do sometimes think, oh, like that imposter syndrome where you feel like you shouldn't be somewhere because other people are better than you. We all get that. Believe me, even me, Dame Kelly Holmes, double Olympic champion, gets imposter syndrome. Anyone listening in? And I said, no, but I want this. I said, you must have room. He said, well, we have a box room. I said, can I have a look at the box room? And I just sort of, at that moment, was so determined that I was going to start this charity. I would take anything. So I went to this big offices. It was literally a box room. I unpiled all the boxes and I knocked on his door. I said, I'll take it. So I took it and I had a laptop at the time and I sat on the floor. I didn't have a chair, a table, nothing. I sat on the floor with my laptop and I looked, researched how you start a charity. I already knew I wanted to start with young people. And that was how my charity was born. And we're now 16 years old, or we're going into 16 years old.
Yeah.
We've helped over 500,000 young people around the country. We transitioned the life of 500 plus athletes into new careers. And to become mentors for our young people's programs. And basically, you know, I went from chairing a board. I don't know how to chair a board. I chaired a board of like 12 people for 8 years.
Well done.
Because what I realized is that I know what I want the charity to be. Yeah. I get the people with the skills, because everyone has different skills. And we have to remember that we don't always know everything, which I used to think I did until I started this world. And then I thought, well, actually, you know, I need somebody that knows finance. I didn't know finance and numbers. It wasn't good to me. But if I get somebody good, they'll help me.
Yep.
I didn't know about marketing. But if I get somebody good, can help me. And what happened then is I have a team of people around me. I started upskilling myself because I'm listening to them. I'm learning. I know what I want my charity to be. And here we are 16 years later. And that's from not having a clue.
Well, your charity sounds really interesting, Kelly. Can you tell us some more?
Basically, my charity, we work with disadvantaged young people from areas of deprivation, sometimes in a community setting and sometimes within the school sector. So we take young people who maybe feel that they can't apply themselves to the normal curriculum that well and are on the verge of maybe getting expelled or needing more support outside of the school system. So what we do is we build programs with our athletes. So our athletes have now been trained to be mentors and they work on all our programs. We do it like in different phases. So we basically do like it's almost like on your mark. So it's kind of bringing those young people in to learn about that resilience and connecting with people and believing they can be something. So some of our young people have been second or third generation unemployment, unfortunately, because what they thought was is that they can't be anything else. So what we do is our mentor comes in and works with them as a group initially to find their own skills. And when you have young people that think they haven't got any, you're trying to pull out all of them. And you start talking to young people and they're actually brilliant. And so we have transitioned, I think, we've worked with over 500,000 young people around the UK.
Yeah.
And what we basically try and do is give them the belief mechanism that they can be whoever they want. So we give them all the skills and the tools that allow them to feel like they can participate in situations that maybe they couldn't in the past. Maybe they come together and you've got some of them that feel that they don't know how to interact with others a lot. You know, they're nervous about being in those environments and we bring out the confidence in them. I remember this one kid right at the start, and we're now 16 years old. And we did this On Your Marks, Get Set, Go program, obviously, alluding to my athletics. And On Your Marks was getting them all together as a team, learning team building, communication skills, the resilience, life lessons, positivity, all of the things that just as a person you need in the world. And I remember this young boy, and he came in and he literally had his hoodie up and we were just thinking, what I felt like he would have been put into a box, that anyone that looks like that, let's just come up with a hoodie, you know, they're all together, that they're, oh, here we go, going to be trouble type thing. And that, unfortunately, for young people is what a common thing is because when you see a group of kids together and they all look like they're going to be troublemakers, they're all put into the same box until you actually realise that everybody has the ability to be someone. So this boy came in, he had his hoodie up and he was like literally grunting. He's coming in and we're trying to get him to communicate. And he's like, and we're just like, you know, why are you here? Oh, I was told to come here. And I was like, okay, yeah, but you're told to come here for a reason, right? So the reason is that you're going to go away from here being a better version of yourself. Anyway, my athlete took him away, got him, and day by day just started to open up. After this program, in the middle of it, we have go. So they do this first set, which is sort of setting the scene, feeling comfortable.
Yeah.
Second set is working in the community, doing community projects, going to schools, old people's homes. And what that did for the young people was empower them to think, I'm helping somebody else. Because when you feel you need help and then you're actually given help, actually you feel then more like, oh, everyone's taking me seriously. And then we have a go project, which was then interacting with businesses. And I remember this one boy in particular, the one on the hoodie, on the go event 9 months later, I was given all the certificates out and he walked up and I thought, oh my God, I know that boy. And he came up and he's dressed in a suit and a tie and he came on stage. I gave him a massive hug and I was like, you stuck at the program. And he went, it's the best thing I've ever done in my life and my life has just begun. Oh. And he walked off in my tears. So the charity is there to empower.
Mm-hmm.
It's to take young people who believe they can't do anything in life, to feel like they've maybe got a back foot in their learning. They don't feel like they're getting the support they need. It's to take them slightly away out of the maybe the education system to an environment that's neutral.
Brilliant.
With athletes that will give them the hope and the desire to be good and to make them believe they can be something better. And when they come on our programs and you see the change, you just know you've made a difference. Mm. And for me, that's everything. If I can give that back to a young person who says, I have transformed my life because I've just been heard, that can make a massive difference to society.
Mm.
So our charity is 16 years old. I can't believe it. From sitting in that little box room.
If you want to build on your skills and get yourself on the right path to success, visit the City College Plymouth website, cityplym.ac.uk. You can hook up with courses, download information packs, guides, and much more. Or find us on social media. We're Skillfully Speak on X, Skillfully Speaking Podcast on Instagram, and Skillfully Speaking on Facebook and LinkedIn. Skillfully Speaking, where hidden skills are revealed. Now back to the conversation.
And it goes back to, isn't it, the mantra of that you have to love yourself so that you can pour the love to other people.
And you have to hope that somebody will love you too to help you through it.
There's some enterprise and entrepreneurial skills coming in there, and business skills, isn't it? You have to have business skills. And actually, reflecting on that, you don't have to do it all yourself, and bringing in the right people with the right skills at the right time is really important, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And that's the thing. That's what gets you to places. I think for people to get to places is that if you know something that you really want to do, just find out who can help you.
Yeah.
Just ask the right questions.
Yeah.
Because most people that are success. So I think that, unfortunately, for young people in particular, they see people that are successful and think, I can never get there. But what they forget is that person was also at the start of a career as well. And most of the time, it's because you've had a door open to you, or you've learnt about the area that you're going into, you've asked for support, somebody's told you that you could do it better or different, and that's fine, and that's a journey, you know, and that's how I've done things. That sweet shop I said to you, that I worked in, I thought, I want to buy this building. 15 years, I kept going back in my army career, my athletics career. When I was injured, I was going back home to Kent, and I kept saying to the guy who owned this building at the time, I'm going to buy this building. And he kept coming back with stupid prices. No, I didn't have the money to do it at the time. But then I started to get a bit more successful in athletics, and I wasn't really going out because I was just athletics and army. So I was saving my money, everything. Anyway, eventually this building came up for sale. So we're now 15 years of me threatening the estate agent and saying, if you don't come back to me, I'm going to hurt you. Anyway, by the time this building came, it was like derelict. And the estate agent just said, it's come for sale. Do you want it? And I thought, oh my God, I've been talking about this in my village. I come from a small village in Kent.
Yeah.
Everyone knows I want this building. I can't say no now, can I? So I ended up getting this building. And I didn't at the time really know what I wanted to do with it, other than when I was a young girl in the sweet shop, it became a hub. It was like the community all came in. I remember seeing all the older people and thinking, oh, I want it somewhere where the community could come together. Because I'd always, like I say, been in charity, I'd love that sort of feel. I thought, right, I'm going to buy this building. So I bought this building. And now you've got to remember that this was about a building that is now going to become a construction site because it needs redeveloping. And I got a guy in who's meant to be a project manager to look after structural engineers, builders, surveyors, to look after all these. And this guy kept coming back to me all the time. Now I'm paying him a lot of money, asking me the questions all the time. And I'm thinking, I might as well do this job myself. Listen to this. So I decided I'm going to be the project manager for a complete commercial building restructuring, which meant this building was getting knocked down and rebuilt up from the ground, and I was going to lead it. I've got the hard hat, the boots, I've got the lot, right? So then what happens is, they're all coming to me asking me questions, and I'm thinking, oh God. So I'm coming with all these plans, and I've got all these people, and I know what I want it to look like, so I've gone with the architect and the designer, I've gone with all them, I know what I want it to look like, and then I've got the structural engineer. They're coming with all these plans. They had all these numbers on, all these things. I thought, oh my God, I'm so bad at numbers, you know what I mean? But then I thought to myself, like, what is it I want? I want the best building. I want it to look good. I want it to be big enough to house what I want it to be, and I wanted to do a coffee house because I thought, oh, that brings people in,
community.
Food and community and whatever. And it was a big building. I thought, right, so what is it? I know what I want. So I know what I want the outcome to be. So I took that the same as my athletics. I wanted to be Olympic champion, right? So I've got to get people to help me like I did in my athletics career. I've got to get people who know their role and like I did in my charity as a chairwoman with a board, I've got to get the right skills to get that building built. So I just broke it down. So I got all these people and I said, right, I was having these meetings with them individually. All these plans are coming, the numbers suddenly become wrong. I'm looking at these two plans from, you know, a structural engineer and a surveyor, and I'm thinking, something's not right here. And what happened was, I'm thinking, no one's communicating. So as an athlete, I had to communicate with my physio, my masseur, my training partner to become Olympic champion.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah,
when I won my two gold medals, it wasn't just me. It was all everybody else that helped me get there.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, this is the same process. You got to communicate. So I wrote this whole email. When I was an athlete, because now I'm retired, right? I used to have my physio, my doctor, my da-da-da-da-da, but we have to communicate effectively for us to get the outcome to me to be Olympic champion. So I need you in your role, to not just think your role matters, to communicate with the builder, with this and this. And I wrote this whole email and I copied them all in. And it's five different types of people, all different skill sets, all different roles, all different expertise. All I knew is that I need that building and it needs to be good. And I wrote this email exactly in the same mindset of being a chairwoman and exactly the same mindset of being an Olympic champion, that no one can do this on their own. That building will not come by just having a builder. It won't come by just having an architect. It won't come by me having a vision. We've all got to come together. And what happened was they all wrote back to me, oh, I didn't think about it like that. I didn't think about communicating effectively and getting the best out of each other. And anyway, by the end of it, my building became best building in the Southeast in 2014.
That is right? Congratulations.
But the point of that story is that with passion and vision, this takes you a long way because you know where you're going. If you don't have any of that, what are you waking up to achieve? So it can be small. But if you have passion and vision, you know where you're going.
Yeah.
Then you've got to think, how do I get there? Then when you realise you might have to have people that help you get there, you've got to find those people and you've got to work with them and tell them what you need from them and ask for support. And when you get that support and that buy-in, because you're like, you know, working with somebody together, they buy into that passion and that vision and your energy. And if it's positive, you can get a long way because doors open, opportunities come, and then you get the results. So the whole point is it doesn't matter whether I'm an Olympic champion, doesn't matter if I'm a chair of a board, doesn't matter if I'm in charge of a big project. All it matters is that I knew where I was going and what I wanted and I never give up on it. And that's the whole point. In life.
I'm not sure that you realise what you just said in terms of being an educationalist and being the CEO of a local college who is preparing the future workforce, the carpenters of the future, the plumbers, the electricians, the engineers, the athletes even. And that story that you've just given is absolutely priceless because in a nutshell, it says it all in one. Yeah. So it's looking at it holistically from the skills that you need, but also those other skills like communication.
Yeah.
And those traits like passion, like determination, like grit. It's
I mean, amazing. I love the fact that you say about all the carpenters and that, you know, two of my brothers and one of my sisters are carpenter. Because again, they weren't academic at school at all.
Yeah.
And they went into something that they loved. They went to college and they learned how to be carpenters and they've done it for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
You know, and actually as a family, we're all that way inclined. We've all gone into sort of manual skills and things.
Yeah.
Design graphics or something, which was just a printer. One of them's a printer.
Amazing.
You know, and he's done that for 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, is that all of those roles are needed.
They're absolutely needed.
Like, I couldn't have built that building without a brilliant carpenter a bricklayer or an electrician.
That is a powerful story.
It's a great building, but that wouldn't have come without the skill sets of all these people that we're talking about.
Yeah.
And we need those people. That didn't take a doctor to build my building. And we all need a doctor. Of course we do, but that didn't take a doctor. That took somebody who had the skill set that I needed at the time to make it really good.
Yeah.
And that's important that you just go and you just enjoy it as well. Enjoy being that person.
Yeah. You have been also on a different journey and you've brought out a book. So can you tell us a bit about that, please?
I brought out a book because in June 2022, I did a documentary called Kelly Holmes Being Me. And that documentary was me talking about being a gay woman, which I hadn't talked about at all in my public life. Because I had lived through an era and fear of coming out publicly as gay, because when I was in the military, it was against the law to be gay, basically. And when I joined the military, I didn't know I was gay. It just happened that, you know, I was. And what happened was, is that over my life and journeys, being in the military, being an elite athlete, there was a lot of barriers to being my authentic self. Firstly, being in an industry or situation with the military where it was illegal, I lived with that fear of being found out because I didn't want to lose my career and I didn't want to be kicked out and all the things that went with the potential of that. And then back in the day, again, diversity inclusion wasn't talked about like it is now at all. I didn't know anyone in sport. We talk about role models who was gay. So there was no role modelling for me. I didn't know at all. So at the age that I finished my athletics career, which was actually 35 when I retired, I still kind of kept that in. Because now I was put on a pedestal in the country. I became a household name and I was worried about the bigotry and the bullying and the judgment that went on in society back then. So I kept it in. And basically what happened is lockdown came and I got to a point where I just thought, I can't deal with just not being myself, because diversity and inclusion has become such a massive part of what society is about now, giving people the right to be them, to live their authentic life, to just bring their full sense of themselves to their work or to college or university or whoever, because that's what gets the best out of people, because they're happy. Whereas I didn't have that. So I went through two careers where I was being me and I was being the best I could be, but there's something inside that wasn't allowing me to feel happy. So I had the lockdown, and during lockdown, I basically lost the plot. You know, I made a decision that I have a choice to live or to not live. It got to that point. And to live was to be okay being in the public domain, saying I'm a gay woman. But that took me 34 years of living in fear to do that. The fact is, I bought the book out really just to describe what that journey was like during lockdown, because I'd already brought out an autobiography in 2005, which was talking about my life, my upbringing, my career, my successes, my everything, but it didn't really have me. So this story is really about my journey to being my authentic self. It tells a real in-depth pathway of my mental health and how that deteriorated throughout all of the years. One, because when I put so much into being the athlete I wanted to be, was also because I felt that that was given me. Because I couldn't give the other part of me. Being successful athlete was driving me to be happy, because, you know, I could win medals, but then that's not yourself, is it? You know? So anyway, I bought out this book called Unique. And the reason why I called it Unique is when I was at school and I was the only mixed race girl or person of colour in school, I was like the only white kid in everywhere I went. And I remember back in the day, there was a song called Brown Girl in the Ring by Boney M. And of course, I was the brown girl in the ring. And instead of making that a detriment to me, when I was pushed in the middle, I was like, oh, tra-la-la-la-la, singing the, you know, middle of the ring, thinking, oh, well, I don't want to be the same as everyone else. And when I went to secondary school and I felt I was useless at everything because I was, you know, not academic, and then I found the one thing that was I was good at, which was running. And again, I felt really different. I remember turning around to my friends and saying, I don't want to be the same as everyone else, so I'm unique, so I'm going to have that. And that was taking that positive edge to what could have been a real negative childhood of feeling, who am I? What am I doing? You know, I'm so not me. And I took that name, and that's why I called it Unique. And it was just the fact of holding on to something that made me who I was. So when I couldn't be my true, authentic self, I had that one thing that I just thought, well, I'm not the same as anyone else. And I did it because I wanted people to know that it's okay to be you. And everyone has the right to be them, to live their life authentically, to be heard, to be seen. Because at the end of the day, we have to live through our life as well. We have the right to stand side by side with everybody else, because what makes us us is our differences. Everybody is different for a reason. And if you can't bring your difference, then you've never been your true self, authentic self. And you can never really gain everything you want to gain from who you are, because you're hiding a part of you. And I think the moment that people can be that and stop hiding the part of them, that's when anyone looking at you gets you. Now I can be open. I go for meals with people. I'm getting to learn about people. I'm asking questions. I'm meeting so many people. I've made so many friends. Up until June 22, I didn't do that. Yeah, I'm double Olympic champion Dame Kelly Owens. People can't understand the difference. And the difference is me being me. So I'm really happy with who I am now. I shout about the need to have diversity and inclusion in the workplace and in society. I think it's important people understand the need for people to have their individualism. I think the difference between not and being is a life decision. It's very detrimental to people who can't just feel they can breathe because they're worried about how you think about them, how they look, what they're saying, what they're doing. And if half your life is consumed with those negative thoughts about what people think about you, you're only living half of your life. And that's what I felt I was doing as a person. So now I'm an advocate for diversity and inclusion. And, you know, I'm never going to go, as I say in the book, behind the curtain again. I'm going to be my true, authentic self. And I also realise that if anyone judges me after now saying I'm a gay woman, yet they cheered me on across the track or inspired my being as a person, it's your problem, not mine.
Dame Kelly Holmes, it has just been an absolute privilege to be with you today, listening to your story, and I'm humbled to be sat here with you. So thank you so, so much.
Thank you for having me.
Skillfully Speaking is supported by Babcock International. Visit babcockinternational.com. Presented by Jackie Grubb. Produced by Paul Philpott. Production support by Lisa Hartwell. Edited and mixed by Martin Burgess Moon. Video content by Mark Stevenson. Coordinated by Louise Greenleaf. Produced by Fresh Air Studios. Copyright City College Plymouth. All rights reserved.